you an HR department of one trying to figure out how to balance task and strategy while keeping up with changes in regulatory compliance? Do you need a fresh outlook on old topics? Then stop what you're doing, grab your coffee, and get ready to recharge. If you have people, you have problems to solve and things to do. Your host is Brenda Neckvottle, a 20-year human resource professional, ready to explore the HR industry with veterans of business and life with fresh eyes and new ideas. Learn about the rapidly evolving changes in employment law around the country, as well as new tactics to deploy and build engagement in your workforce. If you're looking to implement new practices to make your job easier in HR, then this podcast is for you.
Hello and welcome to the Best Practices in HR podcast. Welcome back, or welcome for the first time, either one. I am Brenda, the HR lady, and I'd like to thank you for listening to the show. If you are a returning listener, yes, I've had caffeine. And I want to thank you guys so much for coming back for yet another episode. And if you're a first-time listener, don't let my high level of energy freak you out and scare you away, because I'm here to help share with you the strategic and tactical HR knowledge so you can master the what and the how in this field. I am in the human business, and that means a greater number of dynamics in the workplace to balance and manage. And you know what? We got an awesome five-star review the other day. I gotta read this one to you. So it says, I really appreciate the podcast, especially in this unprecedented time for all in HR. And this podcast seems to be designed for small companies with a small HR team. However, I work in just the opposite, and it still immensely benefits me. Great ideas, and this podcast keeps me on track and inspires even on the worst days. Thank you, Brenda, for being our HR guru and inspiring cheerleader. And that is from Taylor Ona. Aw, thank you so much. That is awesome. So you know what, guys? If you like what you hear, you know what? Give us a five-star review, because we got really great people out there like her and like you and like him and all sorts of other people that are out there. And you know what happens is that when you do a review like that, you give us five stars, it moves us up, and that's how the algorithm works, so other awesome people like yourself can find this. So, all right, the countdown is on. I have it in my hands. I'm literally looking at it right now. Got my both paws and mittens gripped right around it. Can you hear it? Those are the pages of the book that is dropping Friday, June 5th. Best Practices in Human Resources, How to Claw Your Way from Wannabe to VP. That is my book. It is coming out. I am so stoked. You can still get your pre-order copy, or your pre-order copy now. just go in and buy the thing, will you? I'm not saying it very well. You can go ahead and pre-order on the website at brendathehrlady.com. Go ahead and click shop up at the top, and in doing so, you will be entered into a random giveaway for a care package from me that is valued, it's over $250 now, and it's going to be awesome. Primo merchandise in there, all sorts of really good stuff. Get it. And matter of fact, when you do order a copy of the book, you do get a little goodie from me. And if you are a VIP tuning in and you have not placed your order yet, our VIPs get a little extra love from me because they are a VIP. And I'm going to tell you how to be a VIP in just a second. But there's a new tool that's out for you guys. It is free. It's available for you. You can go and actually figure out how to do some of this crazy stuff. It is a free assessment. It is coming out. It's a tool that will allow you to use a kind of like a visual gap analysis and help you kind of channel where you need to focus your efforts on. And if you don't quite know where to get it, or how to jump in and learn all of this stuff, you can, upcoming is the new HR Compliance and Strategy Masterclass, and it's going to be releasing here, in a couple of weeks. So keep your eyes open for that, and it will tie directly into the new tool where you can actually do your gap analysis. And if you want to jump on things and stay up to date, because there's so much changing, it's crazy. I mean, OSHA announced the other day that they have turned around in such a short period of time their opinion and determination about recording any type of adverse reaction to the vaccine. If it was mandated by work, you now don't have to put it on the OSHA 300 log. So it's just stuff that's happening so fast. And really, you know what? The best way to keep up with stuff, if you want to be good in this job, if you want to just like really feel good about the work that you're doing, there's two things that you have to do each and every single day. I have been doing this for 23 years. You have to read and apply. Even if you just get a sense of what's going on, you have to read and then apply. And apply your knowledge and apply your skills. And one of the ways that you can do that is jumping into the HR resource site and becoming my VIP. And you will give you access to the current HR news, which includes six major employment news categories, including COVID updates, employment law, legal changes, litigation, collective bargaining and unionization, which is huge also right now, stuff for government contractors on affirmative action, EEO1 reporting and OFCCP updates, as well as disability. Now you get real-time comprehensive updates for individual states on top of that. We're over 100 streaming articles from nearly 70 resources across the U.S. and one in Canada. There's downloadable HR tools, there's videos, there's case law summaries, and you get an invite to join me in Clubhouse. And for Android, you guys can utilize that link, and then once you're in, you're in. So you get to become a VIP, and you get an invite as well. And so we are ramping up more in the VIP territory. It is coming, and can't wait. So all sorts of good stuff. And as a VIP, you also get announcements, early announcements of things that we're doing, things that I'm up to, places I'm going. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yes. There will be something coming down the pike soon, but if you're not a VIP, you're going to have to wait a little while longer. So we got some pretty awesome stuff that is happening, and I've got to keep my mouth shut about it until we get there. All right, so a little while back, we had Will Branham on the show, and he shared with us the benefits of broad-spectrum CBD, which means that it has no THC in it. And if you haven't heard Will's interview, by all means, go ahead and hop over and jump on episode number 78. If you've tried it, it's awesome stuff. If you haven't tried it, you can get 20% off on your first order at nw-recovery.com using the code NAKEDHR. And something about CBD is it does a lot of benefits to it. It does a lot of good for the body in a number of different ways. So if you're considering it, now's a good time to go ahead and reach out to Will. He will be more than happy to go ahead and help you figure out what it is that you need, and you'll be more than happy to usher you. He's got all sorts of kind of topicals. He's, oh my gosh, I swear, I got like the whole line, and it's just, I love it. Love it, love it, love it. But the CBD, the gummies are the best, the absolute best. All right, so we have some friends of ours over at Forest Capital Management, which is an independent financial advisory firm, and they help small and medium businesses really optimize their retirement plans. Now, your company's retirement plan is really instrumental to your employee success in the life after work. And Forest Capital Management can help plan sponsors like you make sure that your 401k or your 403b or whatever your pension is, your program is designed and operated in a way that maximizes success for your employees. Now, to learn more or to actually talk to an advisor on how you can improve your retirement plan, you know what? Hop over to the website at forestcapitalmanagement.com. And again, I'm going to give you that website address. It is forestcapitalmanagement.com. And you'll be able to learn more about the services that they have and what can actually benefit for you as well. All right, so we're going to get into the meat of all this today. So the information that is available through this podcast is, in fact, for informational purposes only and not for the purpose of providing legal advice. You should contact your attorney to obtain legal advice with respects to any particular issue that you may be having. If you do not have an employment attorney, go ahead and reach out to me, and I can refer you to one of our friends over at Jackson Lewis.
There are approximately 2,500 members of the U.S. Special Operations community who transition out of active duty military service every single year. The Honor Foundation has dedicated its mission to serving these elite individuals on their journey to prepare for life once they take off the uniform. In the past few years, we've begun our own journey to reach this number, launching 3 physical campuses in San Diego, California, Virginia Beach, Virginia, and near Wilmington, North Carolina, along with a virtual campus to reach members of the community anywhere on the planet. I spent 26 years in the Special Operations community as a SEAL. I graduated from THS program, I served on the board of directors, and now I'm proud to lead this organization into the future to continue assisting these transitioning service members and their families. Our dedicated team, our world-class program, and our incredible tribes of supporters are standing by to help THF alumni and future fellows, and are committed to providing the best possible support system and resources to better serve this community. Our vision for the Honor Foundation is clear: to impact every transitioning service member from the U.S. Special Operations Enterprise through our programs and support, and to be a catalyst for overhauling the entire DoD transition program. It's a big task, but the community deserves it, and we're driving full steam ahead to make this a reality. If you've been inspired with what the Honor Foundation's done in the last 5 years, I welcome you all to join us as we craft the next chapter in defining what it means to serve others with honor for life.
Folks, today we've got a pretty cool guy on that I've gotten to know over the last couple of months. He is a best-selling author as well. And we play together down in Dallas when we come in once a month to do a fly-in and do a meet and make really great things happen. I'll actually see him next week as well. And by the time we get this recorded, it'll probably be done, but I'm expecting it to be an incredible event. And really excited to have Thomas Keenan on. Thank you so much.
Hey, Brenda. Hey, first off, I always like to begin podcast interviews by just telling you how grateful I am for the invitation to come on here, share my story and my message with your audience. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you for doing it. I really appreciate it. So yeah, please go right ahead. We'd love to learn a little bit more about you and your story. And
sure.
And then I want to talk about your book.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. So my story is, I don't think it's unique, but again, it's my story. So I don't think anyone thinks their story is unique until they've
Did you ever notice that people, you think your own story is boring? It's like, who wants to know that? And everybody's just like, oh, no. Tell us. We want to hear what your story is.
So true. So I started off basically being born and raised Long Island, New York. My parents divorced when I was 4. Mom pretty much raised me. Dad taught me exactly what not to do as a dad. Nope. That's the long and the short of it right there. By about the age of 16 or 17, my mom was like, hey, look, listen, you need to go with your uncles because I need to go out and make some money and basically make ends meet for our family, which is me and my mom at the time. So she would stick me with my uncles. And they were both guys who work with their hands, hardworking dudes. One of them was owned an auto body facility and did, you know, auto repair and stuff, just a handy and overall individual. And my mom's older brother owned a used car dealership and a detail facility. So between these two guys, between home improvement projects with them and working at their businesses with them, they're both small business owners, I got my hands dirty, figuratively and physically. Jumping into the small business space and learning how to do things to work on cars. And pretty quickly, I realized that I loved automobiles, but I wasn't in love with auto body. I wasn't in love with auto mechanics or cleaning the vehicles. It was all cool. I was grateful that I had the opportunity to learn that, but there wasn't a real passion there. And it wasn't until I was about 17, I met a kid who was a little bit older in high school, and this guy had an audio system in his vehicle. I'm like, wow, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. He's got this big music and loudspeakers and all this craziness going on. And then it dawned on me that, wow, there's actually a business here. You can combine those two things. You can combine the automotive space and you combine the car audio. And okay, well, let's look into this. And that was it. It was game over for me.
Wow.
So I started doing everything I could to physically go in there and learn as much as I basically taught myself as much as I could teach myself. Fast forward here, my senior year of high school, and I was not a good student. I'll tell you that right up front. School just wasn't my jam whatsoever, and it still isn't to this day. I'm more of a person. I learn what I want to learn when I want to learn it, and if it's forced down my throat, I don't respond too well to it.
Yeah.
So I
know that feeling. Check.
I I had to take an elective at the, it was the last semester or so of my senior year. And I needed to take it in order to graduate. I wasn't even an option if I could get rid of this class or not. And the only thing available at the time was technical drawing. And I hated it. Like, well, what am I ever going to use this for? I'm not going to be an architect. I'm not like this, it doesn't serve me. It's kind of the attitude that I went into it. Long story short, I got this guidebook called the MECP, Mobile Electronics Certified Professional Guidebook. Now, this is back in the day when you actually had to mail order the book. You had to send a check and then wait like weeks upon weeks upon weeks for the book to come in the mail. Right? I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. We were still chiseling words on stone. Yes, I got it.
So this book finally comes, and as I'm reading this book and learning about the car audio business and the technical aspect of it, it says, hey, if you want to become a certified technician, you have to go and go to a school, or you've got to go. And one of the options was you could have a librarian proctor this test and become a certified technician. So I don't know how it all came about, but long story short, I wind up approaching my teacher and saying, hey, I can't stand your class. And I said it as nice as I possibly could. Like, this isn't for me. However, I'm really into this audio stuff. And I showed him the book. I was like, here in this book, it says, if we can convince the school librarian to proctor this test, I can actually become certified in this field. And he's like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. Being a pretty cool guy, I'll never forget him to this day, Mr. Gargiulo. And he's like, let me speak to my bosses and see what I can do for you. A week or so goes by, the guy comes back and he's like, hey, we got the green light. He goes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this guidebook, I'm going to break it up into some course material, and I'm going to have you run through it. I'll give you some quizzes and tests as we go along. And at the end of the year, your final exam is going to be taking this test.
Nice.
We're all in cahoots here. The principal, the librarian, my technology teacher, and me. And now it's like, okay, cool. I sold him on this idea. I didn't even realize I was selling somebody on something at the time until much, much later. And now it's like, hey, here's this opportunity. Now the ball's back in your court. You got to go make it happen. And that's exactly what I did. I studied my ass off, and I wound up just passing that test. And the funny thing is, I was a certified professional installer at the age of 17 without ever stepping foot into a retail car audio shop and working as a professional.
That is so awesome. Yeah. You know, and that actually should ring a bell with a lot of our listeners right now, because look, you can become an HR professional knowledge-wise without actually having to sit in the seat. But did you find it challenging to get somebody to allow you into the door without the experience?
Yeah, that was the hardest part.
Yep.
Yep. So high school ended in June, right? And I literally hit the pavement for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I went door to door to every local car audio shop that I could find looking for a job. And I'll never forget it. I walked into a place, never forget, it was Lynbrook, New York. Place was called Mark's World of Sound. Doesn't exist anymore. Walked in there and I said, hey, you hiring? I'm looking to, you know, I want a job as an installer. That's the term used for the role. And the guy's like, no. He goes, I'm not hiring, but I can give you some advice. Okay, cool. I'm dead set on this mission. Like, I'm going to get a job in this field no matter what. Like, I've already made up my mind it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right. He goes, I know you're looking for a blue collar style job. You're going to come in here as an automotive installer or technician in this field. He goes, my word of advice to you, he goes, is come in dressed up a little bit nicer. He goes, not that you're sloppy. He goes, but dress above the role. Okay. I went home and I probably had on, it was warm. It was June. I probably had on shorts and a t-shirt at the time and sneakers, right? Went home. I put on a pair of tan slacks. Okay. Like, just totally not me whatsoever, but I had them. Something my church mom clothes. Probably forced me to have in a closet.
That's right. Your church clothes.
Yeah. I put them on and I put on probably a golf shirt or a button down shirt. And I went into the very next store, which was 2 miles down the road from this guy. I walked in, they hired me on the spot.
Nice.
Yeah. And that was it. That kickstarted my career. And they hired me as an installer the week after I actually had the job started from that date. And I showed up with my toolbox and my work clothes. And the guy's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm here to go in the back and start working on cars. He goes, no, he goes, you're too clean cut. He goes, you're up front. You're selling. And I was pissed. I was like, dude, like, that's not what I want to do. But it's funny, that's what I needed, because right. later on in life, those sales skills that I developed at that front counter helped me out tremendously. So pretty cool.
Isn't it amazing that, you know, I've gotten to the point in life for myself that when things don't work out, I automatically ask the question, all right, that clearly, you know, I have a phrase, if the door didn't open, that's not your door, right? But my question is, when things don't work out as I envision it, my question always is, what's coming to me? Because something is on its way, and it's very obvious I need to do something to get prepared for it. So what is actually coming to me? And I look at that in a number of different ways. That's exactly what happened to you, is that you had this vision in your head, right? You envisioned it. You were frothy at the mouth for it. And then all of a sudden they put you in another position, and you probably didn't look at it as, where's the lesson and where's the blessing? And the lesson is that this is what you needed. And that ultimately became the blessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, look, you know, I talk a lot about HR stuff on here, but it's important for people to hear other people's stories like yours and how you got to where you are, because success is never a straight line. Mm-hmm. It's never a straight line. And so once you start getting really comfortable with that, and you're able to move with the changes in life, because you're either going to move with them or life is going to tumble you along, whether you're kicking and screaming, you might as well go with it. But know the difference between life taking you down a designated path and the difference between like, get out of your head about like, oh, this is never going to happen. You know, you can't just give up, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people give up. You get their first no and they're like, oh, okay, not for me. Yeah, not going to happen.
That doesn't work. My deal with that is that if I get the first no and I give up, it means that I truly didn't really want it. I wasn't that into it. And there's been other times in life where there is no such thing as no.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like, hey, you may be telling me no now, but I guarantee you I'm going to get my way. And I don't want the listeners to think like, hey, that's a cocky perspective to have. No, that's just somebody who's got a lot of drive, a lot of resiliency,
right,
and who has that vision that others may not see at the moment.
Right. Exactly. I mean, look at your situation. Like, you went in, you had a guy that recognized your capability. You didn't have a position, but then you got feedback,
mm-hmm.
you know, and life gives you feedback in a number of different ways. And that's where, if you are truly, truly, truly like committed to doing what you're doing, and it's not just like a whim, right? You're going to get feedback in some form and format. In this case, you got direct feedback from somebody to say, hey, you know what? Take it up, take the dress up just a little bit, and you'll probably have some more success. And that was probably some of the best advice that you got at that time.
Yeah. And it, you know, looking back at it too, the speed at which that success came into my life after making that slight change was, you know, pretty wild. And that really just kickstarted my whole career in that field. I wound up spending 23 years in that field from that point forward.
Yeah. So you did that for 23 years.
Yeah. Yeah, in total. So car audio business, I worked at this place that gave me the job from 17 to 19, so about 2 years. And I got to the point where I did, by the way, me being hard-headed and not giving up, I did work my way to the back.
There you go. Which one did you like better, the front or the back?
The back, hands down, at the time. So I got to a point where technically I had done all I could do. I trained myself as much as I could train myself. And me always wanting more and wanting better, and that's a blessing and a curse at the same time, I believe.
Right.
I said to my mom, who's not thrilled, because at this point I've dropped out of college and I've dedicated all of my time, energy, resources, and like all of my learning has gone into this field. So she says, okay, cool. I see you're done with school. I'm not thrilled with it. However, I'm here as your biggest supporter. What is it that I could help you with? So I said, look, so there's a trade school in Boston, Massachusetts. It's not cheap. I said, but I rather go to this trade school than invest in college. Like, this is something that I see my future in. This is something that I really, truly have a passion for. I love it. And I want to go down this road. So she says, okay. So my mom at that point in time, I don't know how she did it, but she scraped up some money and off to Boston I went. And I spent, I think it was 3 months working at this trade school. Not working. I was a student at this trade school. But the cool part about this place was it was a functioning retail car audio store, and it was an accredited school in the state of Massachusetts. So it was a school attached to this real live ongoing business. So it wasn't just theory they were talking there. No. This place really does exist, and we serve people on a daily basis. So come watch as we do it. So not only did I learn the technical aspects, not only did I learn the fabrication aspects, I started to learn some of the business aspects and the way that they were doing things there. And this place was far ahead of the curve as far as, you know, the time frame and the way that they were doing certain things. So much so I got back to New York thinking that everyone and all the shops in the New York region were doing things at that scale, that speed. And it just wasn't the case. It was a bit of a culture shock. So I came back to New York, landed my first job and my second job and started working at that facility, worked there for 3 years. And at the 3 year mark, I decided that I knew more than my boss. So wound up leaving him and starting my own business with $300 in cash in my pocket.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of it was to, because I wanted to prove a point. I definitely was young, immature, and didn't act and respond in probably the best manner. However, put all that aside, I still had that vision. I knew what I wanted from me. So yes, I didn't act accordingly. However, I knew what the end result was for me and what I wanted, and nothing was going to get in the way of me going after that. So I went after it. I started that business. It lasted 5 years and I burned it to the ground, literally. not flames, but I killed the business because I was the technician in the company and only the technician. I knew nothing about systems and processes. Yeah. I knew nothing about HR. I knew nothing about hiring. I knew nothing about, you know, accounting, book, none of it. I knew how to put the crap into the vehicle in the shop. That's what I knew. I knew how to sell the gear to the customer. That was it. That was the areas or the veins of the business that I was comfortable in, because that's where I had experience working for others.
Yep. You just knew the front end. You didn't know the back end.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. It was a big culture shock to me at that point too. It was like, oh wow, I didn't realize all of this stuff was needed. Oh, we have to pay sales tax. Oh, that was a good surprise the first quarter. So
that's a humbling moment.
Oh yeah. Very humbling. Very humbling. Just, you know, very naive, young, dumb. And, you know, I thought I knew more than everybody, but honestly I didn't. But at the same point in time, I wouldn't go back and change anything because it forced me to learn so fast. It was, hey, you either learn this now or you're dead tomorrow. Like your business is dead. And I wouldn't allow it. Ultimately it did happen, but it was for the better. So that business, 5 years, I had to throw the towel in. I was just losing money rapidly. Went back to work for someone for a couple of years, got back on my feet, got myself out of personal debt. That business, by the time I was done with the first business, I was about $86,000 in personal debt. And I was like, wow, this is a big hole that I've dug for myself and it's time to get out. And that's one of the reasons that I threw the towel in and went to work for somebody, went back to work for someone. It's funny. I have, if you look back at my career, it seems to be 3 year stints here and there, 3 years, 3 years, 3 years, 3 years, right around, I don't know what it is, something around that 3 year mark is when I either outgrow the person, and I don't mean that in a bad way, or it's just time for me to move and go absorb information from somebody else. So I put 3 years in at this place, wound up getting married to my wife. And this is July 2009. By September 2009, I had started my next business with my business partner and had left that company. And we kind of switched gears. So I had been in the car audio business my whole career up to this point. And I still stayed in the 12 volt mobile electronics field, but we, instead of focusing on car audio, we started focusing on fleet installations. So we did GPS tracking, dash cameras, backup cameras, but we weren't doing it for Joe Blow, who just bought a new car at the dealer. We started doing it for the beverage distribution center in town that had 150 trucks, and we go do all 150 trucks. So it was it was much, much larger projects. And one of the things that I learned, you know, we went from a B2C business, a business to consumer, to a B2B business. And in the car audio game, a lot of times we'd have a retail customer come and you'd quote them on a big audio system. Hey, this is a $10,000 job. And they go, oh my God, who has so much money. Now we shift over to the business aspect and you quote a fleet $10,000 to install backup cameras and they cut you a check on the spot.
Yep.
So I'm like, huh, wait a second here. We may be onto something. And that basically just got the wheels to working. Full transparency, I was never that passionate about the GPS tracking industry. However, I saw the opportunity that was there and I had a skill set that allowed me to excel in that field pretty rapidly.
Right.
Started building up the business with my partner and we started getting bigger contracts. And then it came to a point where it's like, okay, it's just the two of us. We're the ones doing all the work, top to bottom. Okay. Front end, back end, everything. And we were working 16, 17, 18, 19 hour days. We don't have time for anything else. Like we have to bring other people in here in order to basically just start taking some of the weight off of us.
Right.
And we did it. It was not clean. It was not smooth. But again, neither of us knew any better. We were just technicians. We weren't real business owners, if you catch my drift.
Totally.
So it got to the point where it was like, okay, I see there's something that's pretty big here. We have an opportunity. However, I'm not smart enough to know how we should best go after this opportunity. So just like I did previous in life, I went to a trade school to learn more about it from pros. Who can we go find who's going to help us take this business to the next level? And that's when I started going in and looking at and kind of researching masterminds and business coaches and that kind of thing. And it led us to a local business coach who's the first thing the guy said, he came in, we hired him. He's like, all right, cool. If you're going to work with me, you're going to read. If not, I'm going to walk out and just we'll go our separate ways. And at first it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I mean, you can see behind me now, I got a bookshelf full of books and that's probably not even a third of them that I've consumed since then. And that right there, as much as I didn't want to do it, that really started to change the game for me. So it wasn't so much what the coach was telling me. It was the direction that the guy was pushing me towards. And I was discovering things on my own because of that push. And that's when things started to get good. You know, it expanded my mindset pretty rapidly. Started learning about a bunch of different things. It wound up getting me in front of the Break Free Academy team. And, you know, as you're a member over there, I started as a member as well and kind of worked my way up through that organization. And here we are today. And not only am I, you know, a member of the organization, but I'm also the COO of Break Free Academy. So I went from, you know, being a customer and now I'm on the inside of that team helping run the machine. Mm,
that's awesome. I love that. So you had a company. Is the company still in existence?
It is. I sold my half of it and I actually, I guess it was May, 2020. As COVID was still pretty heavily impacting us, I went through some personal changes. I would say growth of myself and said, okay, I need to make some changes in life. And a couple of the things that I came to realization was, and one of them I just told you, like, hey, I didn't have a passion for this business. Yes, it's great. We had, from that point forward, you know, my partner and I, we had built the business to pretty much operate without us. I didn't have to go in every day and push the buttons and pull the levers and make things happen. A paycheck showed up every week, no matter what I did.
Right.
But I didn't feel fulfilled.
Right.
You know, I'm dealing with customers who don't necessarily want to deal with me. They're required to deal with me, whether their insurance provider has said, hey, you have to have this stuff in your vehicles, or the federal government has come down and said, hey, you need an e-log device in your over-the-road truck. Go buy the stuff from these guys and let them put it in. You don't have a choice. So I wasn't really dealing with people who wanted to deal with us. And that was, honestly, it was disheartening after a while. And I said, you know what, this is good. Okay. And you've been around me long enough and you know, my feeling on good, good is just the robber of great. I know right. that I could do more in this life. I can impact more people in a more positive, powerful manner. If I continue to stay down this vein of good, it's never going to allow me to go ahead and do that. So yeah. As good as it is to collect this paycheck every week, I need to basically amputate that financial limb and go do something else.
So,
and go ahead.
No. Go ahead. You finish and then I'll jump in.
Yep. So I had the conversation with my wife and I said, hey, you know what? We've been talking now for 2 years about moving out of state and we're still living in New York at the time, Long Island. And I said, you know, there's more opportunity for not just us, but for our family. We've got three small kids at home. There's more opportunity in other areas. What do you think about it? And I didn't even have to sell my wife on that conversation because we had talked about it as a solid couple for over 2 years at this point, but we had taken no action. That was what it came down to.
Yeah.
And we both knew, like, you know what? The writing's on the wall. It's time to get out of the business. It's time to move. It's time to go create something that's going to allow us to leave a legacy for the kids. And that's what we did.
That's so cool. So looking back in your days when you were owning that business, and this is a really great takeaway for HR folks who are listening right now. How protective of that business are you?
How protective was I of that business?
How protective of the business were you?
It was everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that business was everything for us. It was my financial livelihood, you know, and I looked at it bigger too. It was a bigger picture than that for me. So we had 20 something people working for us. And I looked at it as a massive responsibility. So I always looked at it this way. Okay. My title here is the CEO of this company. Cool. Whatever. Right. It is what it is. It's just a label at this point. As the top dog in the company, I'm responsible for every other person that is in this organization. So look at the org chart, every single person that is here. I don't care what position they're in. I don't care if someone's above me, below me, left, right, doesn't make a difference. If they're on this organizational chart, they are my responsibility. But let's compound it a little further. Not only are they my responsibility, their spouse is my responsibility, their children are my responsibility, their mortgage payment is my responsibility, their car, everything, their car payment. If they've got grandma living with them who's, you know, not doing well or is in the older ages of life, guess what? She's my responsibility too. So yeah, I was super protective of the company because it wasn't just me.
Yep. So stay with that train of thought for a second. And so you probably didn't have an HR person, I'm going to guess.
Nope.
But if you did and you had somebody and being a relatively new first time, now successful CEO, because 20 people, that's a success. You know, I mean, even though you started a business and it didn't fail, it was still a success because you learned from it. Right.
Sure.
And so now you've taken this to this level. I wouldn't call it a cash cow, but it's making money. It's taking care of people. You know, you're taking care of your team. And then you have an HR person that comes in that's kind of flustered and panicked and say, hey, listen, we're out of compliance on this, but they don't really know how to sell it to you. What is going to be your reaction when you hear something like that?
The biggest worry, because usually compliance to me means I got to spend more money.
Ah, there you go.
Okay. That's the biggest worry. So, oh, we're out of compliance. Well, how out of compliance are we?
Exactly. Are we just a little, or?
Yeah. Are we just a little, are we in a gray area, or are we like, is this black and white here?
That's right. Or am I expecting, like, you know, leg shackles?
Yeah.
Tell me.
Yeah. No, seriously, that would be my first question is, okay, how much out of compliance are we? And, you know, what's the risk level? Is there a way to mitigate this risk? Can we kind of circle around this? Is there a loop? I'm just being transparent here. Is there a loophole that we can use? Do we need to go set up another company? Do we need to go? Listen, I'm just saying this because these are all things that happen in real life.
Yeah.
Right. Do we need to go and, you know, register something in a different state? Not saying it's right or it's wrong, yeah,
right?
But this is stuff that goes on, and don't think it goes on just in small companies. This goes on through the big companies too.
Right, exactly. And this is perfect because one of the messages that I've been talking about for quite a long time, and one of the challenges that HR people have is actually selling their HR agenda to a entrepreneur or to a CEO, and your reaction, your response to that is perfect because that's exactly what most CEOs go through, right? They want to know these questions. They want, you know, that's the first thing. So if somebody, if you had a preference And we had Bedros Kuli on. He was on, and I flew out to California and we did the 100th episode filming in a studio over there. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how passionate he was about his business. And that if you're coming to him and it feels threatening, man, he's not going to have a favorable response. Right. So I'm trying to educate and trying to help folks understand, like, how can you sell your HR to your own CEO, to your own boss? And this is one of those things, and how you're coming about it is perfect. So if you look back on those days, even as a CEO, a COO now, if you look back on those days, how would you prefer somebody to come and talk to you so that can give our audience and our listeners the opportunity to think through? It's like, okay, I need to hone in on my approach. Don't just listen to what Brenda's saying. Take it from somebody who's in the seat and who's willing to talk about it.
Trick question. Number one, you got to know the personality of the person.
Right.
So for me, I'm data driven. So come at me and give me the numbers. Tell me, give me the proof of why we need to do this and what's worst case scenario if we don't. Whereas, someone, for instance, like a gentleman like Ryan Stueman, he's going to want to know the numbers, but don't come in there and pour the data in front of him because you're just going to piss him off because it's going to take too long.
Go you have in to there explain with the who Ryan is to them so they understand. Sure. I've never spoken about Ryan.
So Ryan is the CEO of Break Free Academy. He's a phenomenal individual. He's someone who I've looked up to, and I've actually paid this man countless money to coach and mentor me through my companies. And here we are, fast forward, and I have the ability and I don't know what's the right word here. I get to work with this guy every day. So I get to surround myself with someone who's done massive things in life on a daily basis. And going back to gratitude, it's one of the things that I write down all the time. I'm grateful for being encircled by good people who are hardworking and have a good heart. Yep. Servant leaders, right? Just looking at personality differences. And one of the things that we do, and you guys are probably familiar with this too, when it comes to the whole HR world, is we personality test all the people who come in just so we can better communicate with our team. Right. So going through the studies and seeing, okay, well, Ryan's this guy where he does not want you to throw up the data on his desk. He wants the bullet points, the bare minimum information that he needs to make an educated decision.
Yep. Dumb it down.
Yeah. Dumb it down as simple as possible. So you know what? Come to me, give me all the data you want. We'll make the decision. And then if we need the ultimate thumbs up or thumbs down, we can then take that bulleted list and go into Ryan's office and say, hey, this is where we're at. This is what we need you to make the decision on.
Yeah. And I want to point something out about Ryan too. Ryan's a little edgy.
Ryan, what makes you say that?
Yeah, Ryan's the kind of guy that you better be prepared not to blush around, that's for sure. And he's great, but he's a great human being. But here's the thing about Ryan is that Ryan is an incredibly generous individual. But when it comes to business, I mean, this man has built a 9-figure business, not 6, not 7, 9. And he's done it more than once. Mm-hmm. And so, he knows his stuff. And when you've got somebody that builds a 9-figure business and the empire is still looks like and is set up like a small business empire, right? You're not talking to somebody who's worried about, a $4,000 fine from INS because your from ICE because your I-9s aren't done. He's worried about, oh my God, a 3-year Department of Labor audit where I have to go back and pay back pay penalties, right? He's looking at the bigger number.
Yeah.
So that means that when you're dealing with somebody like Ryan, he's not going to want to hear your small problems. He's going to want to hear how is the issue going to impact the organization? And he is also going to expect you to propose solutions because he's hired you because he's busy off ready to make his 10th million number, right? His 10 digit business. Yep. And that's what he's working on. He expects you to propose solutions. And if you can handle it, handle it. He doesn't want to know about it. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. Little things that pop up, he knows at this point in time that that's business. There's a cost of doing business. And that's just the reality. And like you said, hey, if we got to pay a $1,500 fine and this whole thing kind of goes away and moves on, just go pay the damn fine and move on.
Right.
But if this is something that's going to potentially cost us 150 grand and lock up our in-house accountants for 2 years, hold on a second. That's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different right. conversation.
Absolutely. If this is going to cost court litigation, if it's going to cost a lot more money to figure the problem out and yet still not go to court, that's when he wants to get involved in something. So when you have that kind of like, if you can use Ryan almost as like a CEO avatar, right? Yeah. That's basically what we're talking about, is know your avatar, know who it is that you're talking to. So go on.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, knowing your avatar is so important. That's in sales, that's in marketing. That's also, I believe, in the HR vein too. You have to know your people. You have to know how to best communicate with them and present them with information. And I also think it's important that you know how to deal with them when there is a negative situation. So, you know, Ryan's the kind of guy. Yeah. Ryan's the kind of guy where if you walk into his office and you're already on the defensive or even offensive at that point, and you kind of rub him the wrong way, you're gonna like put the spidey hairs up on his neck, and he may come back at you and you're not gonna like it. But if you kind of come in and I wouldn't say assert dominance, but if you come in and position it differently. And one of the tricks I've learned with people like Ryan, and if he hears this or not, that's cool, because I'll tell him to his face. Especially with fast movers, people who are visionaries, people like Ryan who've been around the block, it's super important if you want to get something done to make them think that the idea is theirs. And sometimes that requires you to kind of bite your tongue. And because listen, sometimes I'll have a great idea and I'll know that, hey, this is the best thing since sliced bread. We've got to go ahead and do this. However, if I go in there and present it to him, like, hey, look at this. I discovered it's going to do all this for us. It's going to cost us too much money. I don't really see the benefit in it. Okay, cool. No problem. I got you. You leave and you start planting seeds. So instead of it being an immediate return, right, without seeing a change or a difference, or, hey, we took action on this, start planting seeds and let that person discover it for themselves why this is so beneficial to the company or the organization. And when they discover it themselves, they're going to say, oh man, you have no idea. I had this great idea. I read this article yesterday morning. This is what we're going to go do.
Yeah.
Now, as someone who's in a COO role, this is where you need to bite your tongue and shut up and not open your mouth and say, well, because as a human, you want to be like, man, I told you that 3 damn months ago.
That exists in HR too, by the way. Just saying.
Yeah, sure does. So at that point, you have to bite your tongue and you have to let somebody else take credit for something that you know was your idea and that you thought of first. It's not about who takes credit. It's about what action gets done and what happens and what positive outcomes there are in the company.
Yeah. And you know, and that comes with experience. It comes with also a level of maturity in this position, because we are already in HR in a position where, and they've heard me say this countless times, we wake up in the morning and most of this is a feminine driven industry, right? Wake up in the morning and a lot of women have kids. So they're at home getting everybody, dealing with everybody's problems to get them out the door. And then they go to work to go and deal with everybody's problems at work. And then they come home to yet deal again with, you know, everybody else's work. So yeah, there's a natural tendency to, and I felt it, you know, that when you give an idea or suggestion or you've had a victory, right, you do want to be acknowledged for that. And that's a new level of discipline, that if you want to be elite in HR, if you want to be successful, if you want to work for a man who's capable of putting together a 9-digit company, then you're going to have to figure out, how do I exist in this and yet do the job, but find my own levels of fulfillment? Because 9 digits means that, great, we got it done. He's already moving on to 52 other things, literally, with another 75 coming at him, right? So, you know, you have to be very self-reliant. And that's a challenge for women in HR, is that, you know, we want recognition. We want that connection to what we're doing. And sometimes you have to figure out, and I still haven't tapped into the full keys of it, right? But how do you feel good about what you're doing when you're not being acknowledged for it?
Yeah.
That's a hard formula to crack.
Yeah, it is. It is a very hard one to crack. And the way that I justify it is I look for the end result. Okay. And this all comes down to goal setting in a business too, from my perspective. What's the goal that we set out as a team? End of the year, we have a team meeting. We come together and say, hey, this is what we're going to accomplish in 2021, 2022, whatever. And then you start breaking it down quarterly and then monthly and so on and so forth. Over the course of time in that next year, hey, did we accomplish the goal that we set out to accomplish? Because right. If we did, that's my justification right there. I don't care who takes credit for it at that point.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, not everybody's built like that. It's just something that some people have to work on, and majority of them do.
Yep, I agree. You know, I think the book that I read that gave me the whole idea and premise of planting seeds and letting others discover it was How to Win Friends and Influence People. I mean, it's a classic.
Yeah.
But it's one of the scenarios that's talked about heavily in that book. And it's probably the biggest takeaway that I have from reading that book years and years and years ago at this point, which reminds me, I probably should go through it again.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that you brush up on every now and again. There's a couple of them. That's one that I do as well. Built to Last is a really great book. I look at that one because there's a difference between a visionary leader and a visionary company and non-visionary company, and the things that you need to put in place for it. And like 3M is not a very visionary company when it comes to making adhesive. There's nothing foxy about adhesive, right?
Yep.
But they're masters at it. And they are successful every business life cycle that they have because they've got that mindset, that mentality about built to last, right? So look at that. Another one of my favorite ones is it's actually called Beyond the Babel. And that one is a book on how do you communicate to your team and to your employees without people like, wah, 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 that's all they hear, right? And a lot of it is also about, you know, modeling the desired behavior. So those are a couple that I actually have a copy. I'll bring you one down to Dallas. I'll get you a copy. You'll like it.
I wrote it down just in case.
Yeah, Beyond the Babel. It's hard to find. It's actually out of print now, so you can only get it used. But
got it.
But anyway, so speaking of books.
Yeah.
Now, before I go anywhere else, my rule on my show is that guests can swear. Now, let's say this in preparation for you to tell us about your book. Yeah. So you have a green light from the HR lady.
Awesome. The HR lady says it's okay. So I'm going to give you the title. So I have a title. And as you've probably guessed at this point, it's got a 4-letter word in it. The book I wrote is called Unfuck Your Business. Honestly, I had the idea one day. I was listening to an audiobook. I was on the road all day long, and I cranked through this audiobook. One of my hacks, by the way, for getting through audiobooks rapidly is to increase the speed.
To listen to Donald Duck narrative.
Yeah. I mean, listen, coming from New York, I can listen to people talk fast all the time. So 1.5x, 2x, and I'll zip through that book in record time. So I get through this book kind of as I'm backing into my driveway that day. And I'm like, man, it'd be really cool one day to write a book. And I literally smack myself in the back of the head. I'm like, come on, man, it's just a pipe dream. Never going to happen. It's funny because fast forward 6 months, I get into Ryan Stueman's company as a client. And I look around and I say, oh, this one wrote a book. This one wrote a book. This one. The guy who owns the company has 14 books he's written. And that was the real burner for me because I don't know if you know this, Ryan and myself, our birthdays are 6 or 7 days apart.
That's
awesome. We're the same age. So I'm like, hold on a second here. Like, this guy's been through some shit in his life, like way worse than I've been. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got 14 books. So I was like, I clearly need to step my game up. So that's, and I see all these people being successful with this. Like, okay, well, what do I need to do? So it's never a how question. It's always a who question, in my opinion. It wasn't, how do I go ahead and do this? Like, who can I connect with who's going to basically unlock the game plan for me and show me how it's done? And that's what I did. I went out to the network and hooked up with an editor who helped me go through the whole process between outlining the book, writing the book. And she's like, you know, what do you want to write this book on? And I had no idea. I was like, I don't know. I just have this want to write a book. And we literally had a conversation like you and I are having right now. And after about three or four of those conversations, she comes back. She goes, I think I've got an awesome outline for you that's going to be your book. And I was just telling her stories of stuff that had happened to me in my life, both personal, professional, business, non-business, relationship with my wife, relationship with my business partner at the time. And she comes back and says, hey, here's your outline. Let me know what you think. And she nailed it. Round one. I was like, oh my God. So I got to work on putting the content together for the book. And basically I wound up putting it all together. And that's when I saw the vision of somebody else. Like, oh, wait a second. Cool. Now I see this vision. I can go ahead and improve upon it. I can expand upon what is the bulleted list here on this outline. And I said, you know what? I realized that I really like helping people, especially small business owners or people in the business community, because I struggled for so many years in that vein. You know, listen, when I started, there was no, besides like a BNI, there was no networking or mastermind group to join, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, like it wasn't me. I think me personally, I'm probably a little too rough around the edges to go interact in those social circles. So I was like, you know, I guess I'll just learn everything the hard way. And then as things got better and I expanded and grew more in business, I had the means to go out and hire a coach, which I did multiple times. But what did I learn from these people? What did I learn from not just the trials and tribulations, but also the good stuff that happened in business that I can condense down into this book that's 170 something pages and give back to the people so they don't have to struggle like I did for all those years.
Right.
That was the whole point. And that's pretty much what it was. Like I went from the technician and I had to slowly and painfully transition myself into the CEO. Yeah. And I kind of give the premise of how to get that done in the book, but I focus a lot on what I call vision, right? And each and every company needs a vision. And this comes from the top down, right? The founder or founders of the company need to establish this vision. And the vision has three separate components. Okay, it's your purpose, your why you're in business, who you're serving. It's your mission, which is who you're serving, what exactly you're serving them and by when. It's basically a BHAG or a goal. And finally, the other leg is your core values. What are the values that this business is built upon that you're unwilling to waver from? And I'm not telling the readers something that you can't go out there and Google, but it was taught to me by some very smart people. And it was broken down into plain English. And I was able to regurgitate it and basically put my spin on it and also attach my life stories and experiences to why it was so important. And I think that's why the book has been as successful as it has been. I try to make it as easy to read as possible. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple people tell me they've been able to rip through it in like a 3 or 4 hour flight. And I got to tell you, being a reader myself, I like books like that. I like a book where I can go on, hey, I got a flight now, you know, to New York. It's 3 hours or so from here in Texas. Can I grab that book and rip through it on that flight? Because I'm going to rip through it. And then later on that day, I'm going to take some notes and I'm going to go take action on what I read. To me, that's the ideal size of a book, something that I can just zip through. I don't want to read this thing for 6 months and get bored of it because that's what winds up happening.
Right.
So that was the whole intent. And I've got some really great positive feedback from several thousand people who've read it at this point in time. And it's funny. You never know what the day is going to bring you. At this point, you know, people are sliding into my emails or my DM on social media. Hey, just finished your book. You know, it's really powerful. Or, hey, I read your book 6 months ago and I started implementing the stuff that you talk about that I learned. And oh my God, you have to see this massive win that I had because I followed your simple steps and directions. And that right there makes all the hard work and all the work that I put in for the 8 months in writing the book. It made every bit of it worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's cute. Isn't it? So, you know, I have a book coming out. We've been talking about it. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to read yours. Yours is actually on deck. So it's coming up for me. But this is a kind of a neat opportunity because I haven't shown anybody the book cover yet. You ready to see it?
Yep. Let's go.
You ready? All right. I got to share my screen because everybody who's watching, who'll be watching this, because this is one of the few episodes that I'll do with video. Here it is. Ta-da.
Love it.
Very super excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you
very
much.
That's a big deal right there.
It is. It is. I can't wait. June 5th is the big day.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty similar to my launch day. I launched in June of 2019. I can't remember what exact day it was, but if I go back into my Facebook history and whatnot, I guarantee I can find it.
That's awesome. Well, listen, if you could give, you've dropped like massive knowledge bombs here, and I really appreciate it. But if there's one thought that you can leave everybody with that you haven't said yet, what would that be?
Get clear on your personal core values, because they're basically going to guide your life. Yep. Not all business, not every opportunity is a good opportunity. And they come at us when we least expect them pretty often. And if you don't have that established set of values in place, you have nothing to judge those opportunities with.
Love it. Love it. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us. Where can they find you if they wanted to follow you?
Yeah, you can find me all over the socials. I'm very easy to find. All right, so here's the trick with me. My name is Thomas, but I don't have an H in my name. So T-O-M-A-S. Because of that, you can just simply search me on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. And also you can head over to thomaskeenan.com. There you can find links to my book, my blog, my podcast, all that kind of stuff, which is pretty cool. So I'm out there. I don't hide from anybody. I try to be as omnipresent as possible.
Well, I appreciate it. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.